We'll get into a bit more of that later. This is Mark Steiner, and this is from I'm New Here, which was Gil Scott-Heron's latest work, first album in 16 years. Of course, he passed away, and I first heard about him passing away on the internet from my friend, poet and chairman of the Institute for Policy Studies, Ethelbert Miller, who joins us at this moment to reflect on Gil Scott-Heron. And welcome. Good to have you with us, Ethelbert.
Oh, thanks for the invitation.
So tell me, I mean, it was interesting that some of what you talked about in your email was a short piece you wrote reflecting on the time you spent with him after a concert recently when you walked through DuPont Circle in Washington, D.C.
Yeah, you know, that's a number of years ago. I mean, decades ago.
Decades ago, excuse me.
Decades ago, you know, in which, people forget that Gil had a strong presence in D.C.
He did.
And not just as an artist, but also as an educator. You know, he taught at Federal City College, you know, before it became UDC. And I remember he was an influence of Dave Nicholson, who would go on to become like the book editor of the Washington Post. Joanne Jemison, another really good poet. You know, so he had a little workshop down there of creative energy that he sort of nurtured. And you have that legacy as a teacher. You see? And so, you know, I don't just look at Gil as a poet. He's a novelist. You know, composer, you know, so amazing, multi-talented. And I think that's how you want to remember him.
He was an amazing figure, and I guess people did forget about him for a long time, only because in America we're so into headlines and who the top performer is at the moment. And then he went through those years where he was battling his own demons.
Right.
And kind of, and for many people who didn't live through him or don't get into the roots of certain music, kind of he was lost. For a long time.
Yeah, but see, that's our community. That's the amnesia that
yes.
comes up in our community.
Right.
That we've got to, you know what I mean? We've got to discover Jesus every year. Yeah, we don't do that. You know, what happens is that we have to realize that when I look at Gil, no one really replaced his lyrics. No one replaced his political consciousness.
Right.
You know, I mean, we still got the same political situation. You know, and I remember I made reference to Winter in America. After Elizabeth Alexander read her inaugural poem at Obama's inauguration. You know, because I saw a connection there in terms of this whole thing, in terms of this changing America. It was like winter in America again, you see? And so what happens when we look at this birth of democracy, yeah, we hope that it's spring, you see? Or to his awareness in terms of environmental issues.
Mm-hmm.
You see? I mean, that's a consistent voice there. That if, for example, it is not no longer the headline, it means we're not reading the newspaper.
Exactly. And he's also, I mean, he did it with such, talent in terms of his music and his voice and his
right.
writing and his presentation, it captures you without even realizing you've been captured by it just because of how he presented it as an artist.
Yeah, and it was tight. You know, I remember when I was developed as a poet here in D.C., and I remember somebody always wanted to play, like, bongos behind one of my poems, you know what I'm saying? The thing about Gil is that Gil had, like, that midnight band. I mean, the stuff was tight musically.
Yes.
You see what I'm saying? You know, Brian Jackson, I mean, these guys, that connection there, you know, is something in terms of, it's not just a group of people thrown together, okay? And then Gil's voice, I mean, Gil's got that voice. You know, the other person I connect that voice to who we just lost also, Sekou Sundiata. You know, these fellas got that voice. That this mm-hmm. is why the women just got caught up in that voice.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
I wish
right.
I had that voice.
Right.
Mary
right.
Mark. You know what I'm saying? You know, I mean, it's just a resonant voice. And then it's also a voice that I think is just rooted in the blues. You see, so when I think of Gil Scott, I think of the blues.
Yes. I know, absolutely. And that's what it's like his blues met a new world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you mentioned the winter in America. Let's take a couple of minutes. This takes about 3 minutes, but I think it's worth playing for our listeners. You don't mind hanging out, listening to this for a minute?
Yeah, sure.
Winter in America. This is his one of his three seminal albums, I think. 1974. This was, and this was the title track. It goes on for 6 minutes. We're not going to play the whole thing, but just check out the first 3 minutes of this, just to get a sense of if you've never heard him before, or if you forget what he was saying to us. Give it here.
All from the Indians, welcome to pilgrims, and to the buffaloes, who once ruled the
Scott Huron. I'm here with Ethelbert Miller, poet, writer, and of course chair of the Institute for Policy Studies Board. Ethelbert, you mentioned that Winter in America because it was such a profound piece that he wrote.
Yeah, you know, when you listen to it, it's the music is almost haunting.
Yeah.
You know, in terms of, you know, you can almost see like snow falling, or if not snow falling, maybe some type of ash falling. And I think that arrangement is key. And then, you know, here's a piece that deals with our country's creation, you know, the references to the Constitution, you know, democracy, you know, all these things that are part of our country's beginning. But then let's look at what has happened in terms of the state of our society.
Take us a bit back to that when you talked about 10 years ago or so when you walked with Gil Scott
Harris. Oh, no, it's more than that, man.
Well, how long was it, man? How 10, 20,
that
what
goes
was
back
it?
To, that goes back to around the time of, you say, 74? That goes back to, like, the 70s. It goes back to the 70s, man. You know, it's amazing when you go back and I think, like, I was interacting with Gil, like, about the 70s because I was becoming as a writer.
Uh-huh.
And that's why I was just amazed at, you know, being around a guy that everything he said was like a poem coming out of his mouth. You know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
You know, I mean, the only other person I look at that I've known in my life has been like a Mary Baraka. You give him Mary Baraka some Heineken, you know,
uh-huh.
And you're around him, and what happened is it's nonstop. The connection, the poetry, the humor, everything just keeps going, and you realize, okay, these folks have an insight into society, into economics, into politics, you know, and they can just bring it together all at once. You know, all at once. And that's the genius.
And, you know, even when I heard his latest piece, that first album he made in 16 years, even he still had that touch. He still had the way of looking. Some of those pieces were just so deeply personal also.
Yeah, I got a chance to see him at Blues Alley several months ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that was, you know, reconnecting with him. And what really made my evening was, you know, that he had finished one set, and he said, come upstairs with me, you know, and I just got a chance to sit and talk to him, and it was just so many years had gone by, you know, and the first thing you get hit with is, you know, the physical change of his body,
uh-huh.
Because that's what drugs do, but then the whole thing where you realize his mind was still sharp, the wit was still there, and so within that bottle, for example, you know, is still Gil Scott Heron.
Within that bottle. That was such that piece that he wrote, The Bottle. I think let's just take, I want to play about a minute of that.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a minute and a half at most. I want people to hear, because it was almost, when he did this and the other piece he did called Angel Dust, it was like he was saying, this is what these things do to our people, do to us, destroy us, and encompass our souls, and before it happened to him. But let's just hear a tad of this piece he did in the 70s.
Uno, dos, uno, dos, tres, cuatro.
Bottle.
Yeah.
Ethelbert, he knew, like all revolutionaries of the time especially, what the drugs and the bottle were doing to the people.
Well, you know, before, you know, you're dealing personally, you know, the observation, you see this all the time. You go through the African American community, you've got more liquor stores than
right.
anything else. People right. talk about keep Walmart out. Keep the liquor stores out. You know what I'm
Give
saying?
Us some cheap Walmart. Keep the, get rid of the liquor stores, right?
It's the liquor store. And that was a key thing when you look at almost all the black communities. The liquor stores were there. You see what I'm saying? I mean, even in Raising the Sun, with the younger family, they want to get a liquor store. You know
right,
what I'm saying?
Right, right.
You know, and so what happened, you see what happens in terms of people who don't have things, the economics come together, the depression come together, and what happens? You hide yourself in a bottle, okay? And if you're growing up in these streets, you know, you see the wino, okay? You see what the bottle. Before people were told, stay away from drugs, you didn't want to become a wino. You see?
Right.
You know, before we get to angel dust, we're talking about somebody with that little ripple and all that other stuff that was happening. Cheap liquor, you know. And then you see the community, they tell, well, we're not going to sell you like a six-pack. We'll just give you one can or something like that. Like that's gonna set you free, you know what I mean? But that's a thing that when you look at it, I think he's like a blues singer talking about conditions in terms of speaking for the community.
Right.
Not just one person succumbing to drinking or drugs or things like that, but speaking for the community, that social commentary in terms of looking at the entire group.
What do you think about it when folks talk about Gil Scott-Heron as being the father of rap? Sometimes I think, well, before I
oh,
say
definitely.
What I think.
I think spoken word, yeah. I mean, you know, some of you want to say they just came out of the, you know, came out of, you know, out of somebody's navel or something like that. You know, what is that? The Yaku theory came out of somebody's thumb or something like that.
Right.
You know, what happened is when you deal with, let's just take spoken word, okay? I mean, if you go back, what Gil is doing is spoken word, you know, in the beginning of like, you know, some of these, his cuts, you know, that just flows right into the music, okay? And I remember that before people wanted to be poets, I mean, you imitated, if you couldn't get a choir like Nikki Giovanni to back you up, you wouldn't be like the last poet or Mary Baraka, okay? And then mm-hmm. you got Gil in there. You know, those are the people that if you say, okay, how do you sound? Okay, how do you sound? Yeah, I want to sound like Gil Scott-Heron. You see, I can dance in the bottle. You know
right,
what I'm saying?
Right.
I can, you know, he fused that music. And see, this is where people like critics like Larry Neal were saying, you know, those poets that would become as popular as, like, say, a James Brown. Then you saw the black aesthetic at work.
We see,
you're not just a little poet, you know, right. Reading your poems. You're able to fuse the music and everything and widen your audience. But the key thing with Gil is that he maintained the political content.
He always did.
He maintained the political content. Some of these other people out here who might even say, oh, yeah, Gil gave birth to me. Yeah, Gil gave birth to me. Then you put yourself up for adoption. You know what I'm saying? Because what happened is that you filed the market and you got a few little things to shake somebody's booty or whatever. And then you might say, yeah, my mother had Gil Scott records on the shelf. Yeah, on the high shelf. Because she didn't want you to break the stuff. You know how you give something to your kids and they just mess it up. Yeah, just like people say, you know, I was a bodyguard of Malcolm X. If Malcolm's body had so many bodyguards, Malcolm X would still be alive. You know? So everybody want to claim Gil. You know? I mean, Gil ain't driving no big car. Gil ain't got all that money from his work. You know what I'm saying? You know, I remember Gil. I clearly remember Gil talking about the Flying Dutchman record label, how they were ripping him off. You see,
mm-hmm.
he's not a guy like in it for the money and anything like that. You see, some people claim that. I mean, I look at a lot of hip hop. They're not living like Gil, and don't want to live like Gil. They might want to listen to Gil Scott-Heron. You know, but their politics is not on his level.
Well, I mean, the artists like Gil Scott-Heron and Marvin Gaye and a bunch of others I can name and rattle off here, Last Poets. There was an era where they made some money, but they were actually fighting materialism. They weren't totally succumbing to it. Do you know what I'm saying?
And you know, in all fairness too, Mark, you've got to put these individuals, this is all in respect to people who are hip-hop artists also, you can't demand certain things without the social movement. You see what I'm saying?
Right, exactly.
Know, so,
and it was a different
right, you
time.
Know, so it's not like, you know, I'm a hip-hop artist and I'm also a member of SNCC.
No, exactly.
You see? So what happens is that I'm a hip-hop artist, I'm a member of the Black Panther Party.
Right.
You see, where's the social movement that I would be part of?
It's done in isolation.
Yeah, exactly. So what happened?
It's
I do my work. Right, and I'm a performer. I'm not doing voter registration. You see what I'm saying? I'm not even a Pan Africanist unless you know I go travel and see somebody overseas. You see what I'm saying? The conscious movement is not there. You hear anybody wrong when I'm saying they got Pan Africanists on your radio show?
Right.
You see what I'm saying?
Yes.
Is anybody out there that's struggling? You know, they're doing like breakfast programs or something like that. No, they say, "Hey, Mark, man, can you play my CD?" And it has a little political content. It mentions Obama in the last line.
Well, one of the most famous, the piece he's most famous for in all of America is that line: "The revolution will not be televised."
Right.
That came from his very first piece he ever did. Mm-hmm. Incredible album. And this is a simple piece. I'm going to play a cut. It's about 2.5 minutes long.
Okay.
This is from the original album, and it's very simply done with congas behind him. But let's talk about how this has been interpreted, reinterpreted, maybe misinterpreted after we come back. "The revolution will not be televised," Gil Scott-Heron.
Yeah, you know, Mark, on a personal note, that was a composition that always haunted me because he made a reference to Engelbert Humperdinck, and I would always get that hell, you know. I was always getting messed with that, you know. Thanks, Gil.
There were a lot of things in that, though, that, I mean, mm-hmm. there are the what he's alluding to and what he's mentioned are dated from 40 years ago, but the sense of what he's saying could be updated with products from 2010. 11.
Well, you know, or what comes after, because after you will begin to see that the revolution will be introduced to you on television by Sprite, by Nike. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
They would take that concept and sell revolution back using hip hop, you know, to a whole generation. That revolution is not about you know seizing state power, but having a soft drink or new sneakers. They took that language, took that beat, and took it and put it on TV.
And I think what people, I've read a lot of people recently, since his death anyway, talking about he was wrong. The television is going to be televised, but that's not true. Because what he was talking about was you can't sit down on your butt and watch a tube and make the revolution. That's what he was talking about.
Right.
Not Twitter and Facebook that we have now that galvanize people, which is something different.
Right. And that's the thing where, you know, I think we're learning that in Egypt. You know, like, yeah, let's see exactly how much power the military gives up. You know, you want to see, yeah, you can do some social networking. You can do some Facebook stuff. But if you can overthrow the state, let me see that, buddy. You see? And so what happens, yeah, we got these tools, and we think, no, so does the opposition. You see? But what happens if we look at what has happened since, you know, Gil did that composition, and look at our society with the commercialization, you see, and how we've consumed things, you know, that's what I think that's dealing with.
Yes, absolutely. I hope that history gives him his due.
Well, history has to give him his due, but what the media will do, the media will focus on maybe the drug addiction or something like that. I remember when Gwendolyn Brooks died. Okay, the great Gwendolyn Brooks, she got reduced down to We Real Cool. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
We Real Cool. A Pulitzer Prize winning poet. Poet consultant. She gets reduced down to how many lines, Mike?
Right.
You know, so you look
you think that's important? You think that's important, Ethelbert?
No, what happens is that, no, I said this, and you quote me on this. I hope that the complete life of Gil Scott-Heron is televised.
so that we can see
his full life, you see? So for how he got started, you know, his influences, okay? The business side of him, you know, battling to control your music and writing, you know, him as teacher, you see? All of these things become him, not just one composition. Okay, and you know what happens when you begin to look at the media response and people talking about, you can realize he's hitting the entire world like how you have like Bob Marley,
right?
You see, Johannesburg. I mean, you know, you can play that. You play that right now. You see, I'm certain right now in South Africa, some people playing that in tribute to Gil Scott-Heron, the way they play Zimbabwe. You know, when Bob Marley had his composition, they become anthems. See, in which you realize, well, Gil Scott-Heron's music is international. You see, the loss is international. It ain't just, you know, New York and D.C. It's international, and that's how we have to look at these arts. And these are international arts. He didn't have to have them have a whole bunch, like, with 10 million monsters like Lady Gaga. You know, he's reaching a lot of people because his music has substance. Anybody who is dealing with political social change, Gil Scott-Heron is there.
He was. And I think that's just what he... That's how he lived. Even during his periods when he was down, that's how he lived.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I get so upset when I hear more people just talk about his addiction. I mean, we all have these places we fall to sometimes.
Well, look at the economy, Mark. The economy's down. You know, I mean, what happened? People realize our personal lives somewhat reflect the times that we live through. So you can look at the ups and downs of Gil's life. Reflects our society. Look at all the number of artists and actresses that were influenced by the influence of cocaine into society.
Right. Right.
You know, I'm in D.C. You know, with Marion Barry as a metaphor.
Right. Exactly.
You see, and I tell people I'm not going to take anything away from Marion Barry's contribution to the history of Washington D.C.
And exactly, but we always do that. We take one aspect of human beings' life and make that their entire lives, especially
exactly.
If it's the bottom of some place.
Right, and that's the media shaping thing.
Yes,
the media giving you that good night kiss. You know,
exactly.
You've been on a date all night, and then the media kisses you, and you say, "Well, I'm not going to see this person tomorrow."
That's right. No, that's
I thought
right.
I was in love, so I got this kiss. And the media said, then the media goes out and says, "Oh, it was a weak date."
Ethelbert Miller, you're always a trip. Johannesburg is under us right now.
Right.
Which is, again, I think along with The Revolution Will Not Be Televised is one of the seminal pieces you wrote along with Winter in America. I mean, these are the pieces that form a kind of a triptych to me of revolutionary songs that he wrote.
Well, not only that, Mark, you can go from listening to that and just walk out the street and there's Baltimore.
There's Washington. There's Detroit. Right.
Right, exactly.
It's everywhere.
He says in there.
Yeah, well, this has been great. I want people to hear something that is something he did. I always felt that when he interpreted Marvin Gaye's Inner City Blues,
mm-hmm.
that Marvin was gone by then. But if he was looking down on this, he would have given Gil Scott-Heron his props for what he did with that song.
Right.
Because that was, to me, was one of the finest renditions of Inner City Blues than anybody's ever done.
We have to be witness and give Gil the props for the tremendous amount of work they left behind.
Incredible amount of work.
Right.
And we'll be linking to it on our website.
Okay.
And I want you, and some of the articles we've been talking about, the article about Gil Scott-Heron. So let's slide on over and listen to Inner City Blues as interpreted by Gil Scott-Heron, an amazing song, one of my favorites of all time. And Ethelbert Miller, poet, writer, activist, man of the people, the head of the Institute of Policy Studies Board. It's always a pleasure to have you on the air with me, man. And it's like, you know, you pop up on Facebook or an email to me over the weekend, and then I have to call you and have you on.
Okay. Well, you're doing great work, you know, and I have many blessings, okay?
All right, brother.
All right. Stay well.
Thank you so much.
Okay, thank
Take
you.
Care. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland Parkinson's Disease and Movement Disorders Center, providing clinical research trials that evaluate new therapies and the latest treatment options, including surgical intervention for advancing stages of disease. The number for more information is 1-800-492-5538. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Justin Levy and Christina Arison. Our theme music is by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. To hear this show again, podcast any of our past shows, hear additional interviews, please visit us on the web at steinershow.org. And for Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.